Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, February 2nd, 2024. As I always like to do, I like to read a headline from the newspaper, the daily newspaper, to give you an idea of what's going on in the news. And most times it has nothing to do with what I'm going to have a conversation about. But in this particular case, I feel it's relevant. What I'm about to read is relevant to the conversation I'm about to have with my distinguished guest who's patiently waiting to be introduced. So, distinguished guest, pay attention while I read this item from the New York Times front page story. I will now show my distinguished guest that I am supporting newspapers. I'm not a millennial who just steals it from the internet for free, okay?
I get it from Twitter, Ben.
Millennials, you know I love you. All right, New York Times front page headline. Biden cuts off Israeli settlers tied to attacks. Dual message targets West Bank violence. Okay. And here's the lead. President Biden on Thursday delivered broad financial and travel sanctions on Israeli settlers accused of violent attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank, a forceful gesture aimed in part at Arab American voters in the United States who have expressed fury about the president's backing of Israel's war in Gaza. For Mr. Biden, the order served a dual purpose. It was a sharp diplomatic notice to Israel's governing government at a time when the United States is pressing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for restraint. But it also sent a message to Arab Americans, a key part of the political coalition he needs to be reelected, and he is serious about using the power of the United States on behalf of the Palestinians. All right, I'm going to put this down in as calm as I can, make a few comments, and then ask my guests to introduce, and we'll take it away with a larger conversation. So this follows on the heels of what I consider to be a very important vote in the Chicago City Council on Wednesday, when the City Council voted 24-23 to endorse a resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, essentially calling on Israel to stop the bombardment of Gaza and the killing of Palestinians. And this, why I think this was an important measure, number one, the least significant part, it showed that Brandon Johnson had a mastery of the legislative process. And I feel he did a very good job of getting his team across the finish line, which is a conversation I'll have at another time with somebody else. I don't think my distinguished guest wants to talk about that. But I do think that Brandon Johnson did a great job of winning. And it's time the press corps of Chicago recognized that for what it was. A great legislative effort up right up there was Rahm. Anything Rahm ever did, anything Daley ever did, anything Lori Lightfoot ever did. Time to give the man credit, Chicago Press Corps. All right. Number two, perhaps the most important thing. It signaled to the Democratic Party that it was a new day on this issue, and that the old way of dealing with the Middle East and the conflict between Israel and Palestine, between Israelis and Palestinians, was no longer acceptable in the Democratic Party. Now, MAGA is a whole other thing. MAGA officially endorses whatever right-wing stuff is coming out of Benjamin Netanyahu and the people to the right of him. It's like, do whatever you want to do. Turn it into a parking lot. That's the MAGA line. But within the Democratic Party, the Democrats have to be aware that a significant portion of their base cannot tolerate this policy. I'm just trying to speak it as euphemistically as I can. They view it as genocide. They view it as murder. They view it as extinction, if you will. Now, this Democratic Party has to somehow or other figure out a way, figure out a strategy in which they can do the right thing in the Middle East without what? Pulling apart their coalition? And it's a challenge. I admit it's a challenge. I'm not minimizing the difficulty that Biden and all the rest of Democrats face on this. But the reality is, before you find that policy, that strategy, you have to acknowledge that the old ways of doing business in the Middle East are not working, not only not in the Middle East, but politically for you. You want to win Michigan? You want to win that the state of Michigan in the 2024 presidential election against Donald Trump? You got to figure this out. There's other states where the Arab American population is significant. Not just the Arab American population, young people, lefties, my beloved lefties. I don't know a lefty in the city of Chicago says they're going to vote for Biden, except for me. I'm probably the only one, and all the lefties are mad at me for that. But this is a reality, Biden. This is a reality, Democrats. This is reality, Governor Pritzker. You got to figure this out. And Brandon Johnson, he was elected by a movement that was demanding a change in U.S. foreign policy in this area. And he responded to his movement. And I give him credit for that. I also give him credit for the way, once again, I know this is the least important part, the way he got on that phone and made the calls and got four people to walk off the floor, distinguished guest. One, two, three, four alders left the floor. And that's how they got to 20 through 23, and then he cast the deciding vote. So I believe that what went down on Wednesday was not a waste of time. It was not the Chicago City Council moving out of its lane. I think people say that only because they don't like what the City Council did, as opposed to the City Council weighing in. I believe that what happened on Wednesday was a significant wake-up call for the Democratic Party on this issue. I'm not even talking about what's the right thing to do. That's a whole other thing. I'm just talking about what politically is the smart thing to do. So kudos to the Chicago City Council for delivering a wake-up call to President Biden and the Democratic Party. All right, enough of me on that. I'll ask my distinguished guest to introduce yourself, and then away we go. Distinguished guest.
Hi, I'm Ramana Hussain. I'm a editorial board member and columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yes, that Ramana Hussain, dear friend of the show, comes on every other week. Ramana, I know you have some strong feelings about everything that I was just talking about. I don't know if you agree or disagree with me about what I have to say. You have the right to disagree with me strongly with anything I said if you want to. And I will just point out, ladies and gentlemen, that I believe, and I know all of you out there also believe, that Ramana Hussain has the right to free expression and to speak her mind. And so if you don't like what she says, don't try to cancel her. Okay? Can you restrain yourself from canceling her? All right? Just listen to what she has to say. And if you disagree, respond. But don't try to cancel her. She's an excellent journalist, a great writer, and a dear friend. So just let her the space to speak her mind. All right, Ramana, I had to do that. The floor is yours.
I don't know if I'll be canceled by your listeners necessarily, but I'm sure I've already been canceled by a lot of people just because I exist. So, I mean, you bring up a lot of good points. I think as someone from my background, you know, I'm someone who's Muslim. So my viewpoints of the Middle East and the situation in the Middle East involving the Israelis and Palestinians hasn't been the same as our foreign policy has been for decades. I have always known that the Palestinians have been treated as second-class citizens in the Middle East, and that speaking out against Israel has never been popular. You can definitely get lose your job, and that is still the case. You can get denied from jobs if you express a certain viewpoint about what's happening in the Middle East. There was, in the beginning of all this, post October 7th, I don't know if you noticed, but there was a really high-powered Hollywood agent who was Middle East, and she, Middle Eastern background, and, or maybe she was Iranian. I forgot what her background was, but she wasn't a white Judeo-Christian person. And she had tweeted something, and she tweeted an article about what was happening to the Palestinians. I don't know if there was a certain language that offended people. But after she had tweeted that, they had tried to get her fired at her company. And she's a really, really high-powered agent, Hollywood agent. And Tom Cruise had to interfere to help her keep her job. But she lost her position. A lot of us Muslims and or Arabs have been like giving Tom Cruise props. Not that we necessarily like him. But, you know, there was some Latina women involving the Scream franchise who got lost their jobs from the next Scream movie because of they sympathize with Palestinians. So it's still out there. I think it's changing. And I think that's what's making a lot of people uncomfortable, particularly white Judeo-Christians who always have believed that Israel can do whatever it wants and it has a license to do whatever it wants. And without really thinking of the consequences of what they're saying and what they're saying is being allowed to do. And I also think it's important to note that boomers and Gen Xers, a lot of them have not grown up with people who don't look like them. Or if they did, they never really thought of them as their friends. They treated them as their others. And a lot of younger millennials and Zs, they have friends who are Muslims. They have friends who are Palestinians. They have friends who are Arab Americans. Their friend circle isn't just white, Jewish, and Christian people. And they have been looking at these issues a lot more critically. I have a friend who, one of my coworkers at the Sun-Times, they're a married couple, and she's Catholic, white, doesn't really have any skin in the game in terms of, although, you know, there are Christians in the Middle East too, but she said that she never really had talked about Israel or, you know, Palestinians, and her daughter is very, she said her daughter's not that political, but she's been reading up on it and the history and is getting all angry. So this is something that a lot of younger people, and I think what the Biden administration is, they're banking on, and it's offensive to a lot of Muslim and or Arabs, and it has been for people of color for a long time, that I'm not Trump. And that's what is enough for you people to vote for me. It's like the alternative is worse. And it's really offensive to us when we haven't been, you know, treated the same way as white Americans on this issue. It's like Biden, like right after October 7th, he like comes out and, you know, he's giving a very teary speech. He doesn't mention Palestinians once. He doesn't say the P word once. He gave out a statement just a few days ago. It was like the 100 days since October 7th. And he talked about the hostages. Not one word of the Palestinian casualties, not one word mentioning Palestinians. And so I know for a lot of people, maybe that doesn't matter. But for people who are Muslim and or Arabs, other Middle Easterners, we're paying attention to this. And so for him to throw that bone out there this week after the ceasefire, not saying that they're connected, but the ceasefire resolution was passed, a lot of people are, it's not enough. It's, I know he has to walk this line of like, you know, of course what happened on October 7th. And one of the things that I find offensive, and it can be from both sides, it's like, you can't feel for one or both. Like, it's like one or the other. And you can feel for both. And you can, and you know, the ceasefire, you know, this back and forth that's been going on with this ceasefire resolution in Chicago, it's like some of the objections were just so offensive. It meant, you know, they're like, oh, it doesn't say enough about what happened on October 7th. It's so vague. It doesn't really say what happened, what's been happening to the people in Gaza either. And it's just like the mental gymnastics that people come up with about why Israel has a right to do what it is doing. It's just mind-boggling. I mean, we look at past wars that we have supported, past wars that we have engaged in, and we sit there and watch documentaries and start crying about how we were so complicit in this. And that's including the Holocaust. And, you know, it happens because we allow it to happen. And things like the resistance to the ceasefire resolution are an example of the type of attitudes that are out there. And, you know, a lot of people are saying things like, oh, this is a complicated matter. And I'm like, I don't know if it's that complicated to say that you want the deaths to end. I know it's a very sensitive issue about what's happening. But there's also this narrative that, oh, you know, Deborah Silverstein, who was pushing against the city council ceasefire resolution, represents the entire Jewish community. And she doesn't. You know, she might represent a large, you know, swath of the Jewish community, but she doesn't represent Jewish Americans altogether. There was 3 days ago in Cleveland, there's only one Jewish city council member there as well. Obviously, it's a smaller entity, but she called for a ceasefire. So what are you going to do about that? Like the way this is framed by mostly old white journalists and old white politicians, that this is like so, like, it's a travesty. And it's like, that's what the Tribune used in their editorial yesterday. And I'm not saying the Tribune represents all white people, but all the pushback that I've seen, all the columnists, you know, who have been like complaining about like how we're wasting so much time on this resolution, they're the ones that are spending a lot of ink on complaining about how much time that's been on this resolution. And I did not hear the same type of vitriol and pushback when Alderman Deborah Silverstein wanted a I Stand With Israel resolution and didn't want to include any mention of the Palestinian civilians that were being killed. So in essence, I just think that people don't want to think. And they have been making all sorts of excuses to come up with why they're so against it. And I mentioned, like, you know, same people who are like, we're pushing against this resolution. They're the same people who watch Vietnam War documentaries and are like, you know, applauding all the protesters. Then they're the same people now complaining about the protesters, like, you know, interfering with their driving, you know, the way as they're getting home to work. And, you know, I'm not saying that they're not being inconvenienced, but it's just like they're being Karens about it. Like, they're like so entitled, and they're like, and all they're doing, and it's like they, you know, we had a syndicated columnist that we run, Essie Kopp, complaining, and she complained. She actually used the word that, in a way, people being snarled in traffic are in a way being taken hostage. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, okay, way to like, you know, minimize what's happening with the hostage situation in the Middle East right now. And it's like you're comparing your plight to the hostages, and it's just like the rhetoric that's out there, and it's just really disturbing to me. And it's been very like hard for me as someone who is brown and Muslim to be in a newsroom to see the kind of things that are allowed to be said. But then, you know, things that I write about the Middle East are like heavily edited. And, you know, it's like you have all these people zoning in to make sure that, you know, I'm using the right language. Like, you know, there's all this like, oh, you got to make sure you mention October 7th. And I have done that in every single piece that I did. But I haven't seen that by people when they write pro-Israeli stories. I haven't seen the same sort of demands for people who write those kind of stories. So it's just been interesting. And one day, Ben, I will talk to you all about it. But I just feel like a lot of things that I've experienced in the last 3 months have been very telling. I'd like to think that, you know, the world has changed, but in a lot of ways it hasn't. And I think it's really sad that there was so much resistance to this resolution. I mean, I can tell you, like, as out, you know, people, some of my friends and relatives who like haven't been following this back and forth with this ceasefire resolution and with Alderman Deborah Silverstein's resolution, they are just so perplexed that it's so close, that it was so close, that it was 23-23. And of course, there was like interest. There was also like, there were some moments of levity also during the discussion on Wednesday. A lot of us were laughing at Alderman James Gardner speaking Arabic and, you know, kind of like, you know, being the champion. So of like, you know, saying, you know, this is wrong. And like, you know, I have like so many constituents and it's just like the him like using Arabic. It did crack a lot of people up. And, you know, and I do think that I think 20, 30 years from now, there's going to be documentaries about what happened. And there's going to be so much footage of Biden being used, so many footage of what happened in Chicago and the other things that people have said. And it's going to be the same thing again. And history repeats itself. And, you know, I just think it's the last couple of months have been very telling for me and very eye opening for me. And, you know, I want peace. I want there to be some sort of peace. And I know it's not easy and I know it won't be easy to get there, but I think it's okay to call for peace and say that you want the fighting to stop, whether that means Israel, you want Israel to stop bombing and you want Hamas to release the hostages and, you know, stop sending rockets into areas where there's Israelis. I think that's okay to say that and say that you don't want more innocent people to die, because let's face it, most of the 27,000, I just checked the death toll last time, just a few minutes before I jumped on with you. The death toll is over 27,000 right now. And most of those people are innocent civilians. I think about 11,000 of those or more are children. And so I think it's okay to ask for peace. And I think it's okay to say you want the fighting to stop. And it's sad that there's so much resistance to saying that, and that is so politically charged, and that is supposed to be wrong for you to feel that way. It just saddens me. Just that's my personal opinion.
All right, you give me a lot to respond to. I was taking notes dutifully. Number one, your tangent about old white journalists. I think you've been hanging around me too long. You sound like me complaining about baby boomer journalists. You've always been quiet when I've gone on those rants and raves. Maybe you got your little taste of it. You're like, hey, maybe Ben was right after all. And that's going to leave it at that.
No. I complain about baby boomers all the time. I'm just saying.
No. Baby boomer journalists in the city of Chicago taking whatever handout Daily or Rahm gives them. All right. They're here. I'm not going to go down that path.
I have an issue with baby boomer journalists, too.
Yeah, they're pretty much worthless. All right. Okay. So moving on from my thing about baby boomer journalists, the world has, so much to riff on. The world has changed. It's changed dramatically. And I'll just give you a few examples. It maybe hasn't gone far enough. You're absolutely correct. But it has changed. And I'm just going to go back to play the old man, the old baby boomer with you, because you're a youngster compared to me. But in 2003, just think back on this, when George Bush, in his infinite idiocy, launched an invasion in Iraq, even though they had nothing to do with 9/11, there was protests in the city of Chicago. The protesters actually shut down Lakeshore Drive, inconveniencing a lot of drivers, pissing off a lot of people. Mayor Daley responded. Mayor Daley, the guy you keep electing in Chicago, the guy that the Tribune and the Sun-Times endorsed each time around, baby boomer journalist. Mayor Daley responded by making sure his police rounded up those protesters, hauled them off to jail, and kept them there for quite a while. And that resulted in some litigation, some lawsuits, and money had to be paid out, et cetera, about a lack of rights for the demonstrators. But he sent a message. And the message is that Chicago is very pro-war in the Middle East. Chicago is very pro-invasion of Iraq. And if you mess with Lakeshore Drive, or if you dare to do any civil disobedience we are going to hit you hard. And George Bush showed his thank you to Mayor Daley, by flying to Chicago a couple years later, I think it was, to celebrate his 60th birthday in Chicago with Mayor Daley. A little history lesson there, millennials and Zs and Gen Xers. So the world has changed when I think of Mayor Brandon Johnson actually taking the lead on an initiative that's contrary to the foreign policy stances of pretty much every single president in my lifetime, with the possible exception of the great Jimmy Carter. And so the world has changed there. And furthermore, and this is what I'm going to get your thoughts on, it would have been absolutely unimaginable to me that an editorial in any of the mainstream newspapers back in 2003 would have stood with the demonstrators against Mayor Daley and George Bush. And the Chicago Sun-Times editorial, giving you credit, bright one, okay? I just want to show Romana, home subscriber, support the newspaper. Giving you credit, bright one. I thought that was a gutsy editorial, and I did not read the online version. I only read the one that came to my home because I am a subscriber sometimes. I'm the one who pays the bills. But I did read that one. I was like, oh, yeah, this is good. I thought it was fair. I thought it was neutral. I thought it pointed out the grievances that each side has. It pointed out the atrocities of the slaughter of Israelis on October 7th, and it pointed out the atrocity of this ongoing slaughter and carnage in Gaza. So I think some things have changed. And that editorial, I'll conclude by this, that editorial was mentioned in the resolution that was passed as a reason why we should pass this resolution calling for a ceasefire. I would argue that that was the most significant editorial the Chicago Sun-Times has written in this century, right up there with their endorsement of Lori Lightfoot, which they're very proud of. I don't know how much proud the Sun-Times of this is of the ceasefire resolution, but I would say it had a pretty big impact on that vote. So things have changed, Romana. They may have not gone as changed enough, but things have changed. That's my riff. Your response.
Well, there's not that many of people like me in the newsroom in terms of being a brown person and or a Muslim person. I am on the editorial board, and I'm sure people look at those editorials or that editorial that was written in December and look at the makeup of the editorial board and look at someone like me and go, that's the reason. And I'm talking about more conservative people who look at the Middle East in the still old school way. And yes, maybe or maybe I did not write that editorial, but I did. I will say that. This was the one in December. And I can tell you that it was something that I had wanted to write, but all our members on the editorial board had agreed that a ceasefire was needed after we talked to humanitarian workers, after we talked to someone who wanted a ceasefire, who was Jewish, a Jewish American lawmaker. It was a group of diverse people from different backgrounds, and they really laid down good arguments. And someone like me probably would have been more harsh, but you know, I wrote that editorial on behalf of the editorial board, and so I wanted everybody's voice in there. And at the end of the day, I was really happy with that editorial. It is something that I believe in, and in the past there have been editorials that the Sun-Times has written when it comes to Middle Eastern policy, when it comes to foreign policy, and they're not the way I have thought. And they're not the way that I think of. And yes, in the past, we like just support anything that the government does. And I think Alderman LaSpada had a good point. He tweeted the other day that it's not the job of American government or elected officials, like local elected officials, to mimic or support everything that our foreign policy, our international or U.S. foreign policy that's out there. And he goes, and if you do, you haven't really been paying attention to the last 50 years of our foreign policy. And so I think, you know, as leaders, we have a more diverse world and we have different people who are connected to parts of the world. And I think one of the things that's really hard for me to accept or makes me sad to think about is like after 9/11, I mean, even before 9/11, I was still considered the other, you know, I was never really seen as American. My parents always told me, like, whenever I'd tell them I'm American, they're like, my dad used to be like, listen, little girl, if you walk down the street, nobody's looking at you and thinking American. And, the older I get, the more I realize my dad was really right. I've started thinking more like my dad because I used to be very hopeful about this country when I was younger and thought that they were always pushing towards the right thing. But the older I get, and the past couple of years and the past couple of months have showed me that really I have less hope now than I used to. And after 9/11, there was a lot, the way people treated my community and the Middle Eastern community was as if we were not American. And it was sad. We had to go out of our ways to show how American we were and to show people like, oh, we like the flag. Like my mom, like, you know, she showed up in front of her on the front lawn. She bought like a flag that was bigger than her to put in front of the front lawn. And I told her, I'm like, are you really like want that flag out there or are you just scared? And I mean, you know, she was scared, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's because she was scared. And it's sad that this is what we had to do, like show everybody like that we wear red, white, and blue like they do. We like eating the same food we do. And it was sad. And it's like, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm tired of doing that and showing like mostly white Americans that I'm like that because I'm not like them. I think differently. My worldview is differently. And I think that's what's scaring a lot of white, mostly white Americans, is that they're being made feel uncomfortable about our foreign policy when it comes to Israel, and that Israel isn't right. And that's being challenged by not only like people who are brown and black, but also a lot of people who are white, including their own children. And I think that's what's making them uncomfortable and they're panicking. And I think the Biden administration is totally out of touch and is not paying attention to how much our, you know, basically involvement and his silence on a lot of things is going to affect the elections. And, you know, you have someone like Nancy Pelosi, like saying, oh, these protesters have connection to like Russia. Like, that's just offensive. Like, this is like the old school. Like, you're basically kind of like, what's the difference between you and the Republicans? I know a lot of Democrats are going to find middle of the road Democrats are going to find that offensive, but that's what a lot of young Americans are looking at you, especially by the things that you're saying or not saying. And And so I think a lot of the language that I have found problematic in the last 2 months, last 3 months, I should say almost 4 months, is the way, a lot of Americans keep saying, oh, the Jewish community has like so many ties to the people in Israel. And we live in Cook County. Like me and other reporters who are, I'm not Middle Eastern, I'm Indian, but me and the Middle Eastern reporters and others had to keep telling our news editors, like, you know, there's Palestinians here. And it turns out we have the largest population of Palestinians outside the occupied territories are in Cook County. There was what was important to me also to note and why I thought it was important for Chicago to pass the ceasefire resolution was that people have already forgotten that it was just days after October 7th that a little Palestinian boy was killed because his landlord was listening to the radio and listening to right-wing radio. And he got like so scared of the 6-year-old Palestinian boy that he killed him. And I don't think people are like putting the two and two together, they don't think of people like me or Arab Americans have relatives overseas, or that we're Americans and that we could be feeling hurt too. And so this is why it's always disturbed me that whenever there's like an attack, a terrorist attack or some sort of like natural disaster that happens in Europe, like, you know, there's a certain part of America that is like so upset. And then when there's something that happens in a black and brown country, it's like you just see the difference of reaction and the way that people respond to a tragedy overseas if it's a black or brown victim. And so this has just been what's been perpetuated with the discussion that I've been seeing and the refusal. So like when you do speak out, it's the pushback that you get that you are being somehow anti-Semitic when you criticize Israel. And I still think that's there. I mean, now people are saying, oh, yes, you can criticize Israel, but you're still being anti-Semitic when you say X, Y, and Z. And so people, you know, I'm not saying that anti-Semitism doesn't exist. I will say that it does. And it's bad. And it's gotten bad since October 7th. So was Islamophobia. But the difference is, I think anti-Semitism by many Americans, not every American, Ben, I know you know, is condemned. But Islamophobia is usually pretty much given a pass. And it has been pretty much given a pass since 9/11. I mean, people who make Islamophobic statements can become elected officials without any worry. Meanwhile, if a student expresses any sort of sympathy towards Palestinians, it could cost him a job.
All right, I'm going to push back a little bit about anti-Semitism being condemned. And I'm really going to try to say this as calmly as I can. Because no matter what I say, someone's going to get pissed off. But I am going to say this. So I believe that the real threat to Jewish people in this country comes from the right. Absolutely. I believe it. And it's, you go, oh, Ben, why did you say that? It's the right that supports Israel the most. And I'm like, when I listen to the right wing talk about Israel, they want Jews in America to move to Israel. They don't talk about Israel like they like Jewish people. They just want to get them out of this country. Like a lot of, it's like, go to Israel so we don't have to see you anymore. That's kind of how I view the passionate support that like the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world have for Israel. Yeah, go to Israel already. Get out of Georgia because I know you're not going to vote for me. That's me speaking. And so when I hear the rhetoric that's like kind of approved by the Elon Musks of the world about replacement theory and how somehow or other the Jews are like, again, it's, I mean, we're going to get to Taylor Swift, but this like weird conspiracy theories, like in this case, it's the Jews are controlling Joe Biden and the Democrats to bring in immigrants. So they're going to vote. It's to vote a Democrat and they're going to win. It's so freaking absurd because by the time an immigrant's in this country for 20 years, they're acting like every other Republican. They're acting like every other citizen of the country, Ramon. I hate to say it, but it's true. I don't care what your color is. They move out to Buffalo Grove, and they end up voting, oh, Ben, my property taxes are outrageous. And by the way, these Venezuelans, can we keep them out of our neighborhood? So I'm not, the Republicans know what they're doing when they start talking about the Jews are trying to replace us. And so when I look at that rhetoric out there and I see how it's become acceptable in the Republican Party, that's a scary, frightening thing to me. I don't remember heard Marjorie Taylor Greene denounce the rhetoric. I've never heard Elon Musk denounce that kind of rhetoric. Donald Trump has never denounced that kind of rhetoric. All I've known a couple of Republicans in Illinois who've done so, Ramona, but most haven't. And so I believe there's a serious threat in this country to Jewish people from the right. I don't see it from the left. I've had a lot of arguments with a lot of lefties on a lot of issues. I know lefties better than anyone, and I just don't feel it on the left. And yet that's what the Republicans are putting out there. They're trying to get Jewish people to vote Republican somehow or other. Criticism of Israel means you hate Jews. And while they're looking the other way at Nazis marching through Virginia.
So that's No. And I agree with you. And like I said, I'm not saying that there's not anti-Semitism, but I think there's a conflation of criticizing Israel with anti-Semitism. And I'm not saying that there's cases where like someone who's pro-Palestinian isn't saying something like that, that could be constructed or is anti-Semitic. I understand that. And I try to listen. I do try to listen. I'm not, like I've mentioned before, I'm not Jewish. So what you're feeling and what you feel is completely different. But the average white person will tell you anti-Semitism, like in the newsroom, will tell you that it's wrong. But when you try to explain that to them and they let things pass about Muslims and Islamophobia and Arabs and Middle Eastern people and Palestinians, it's like they're like, it's like I've been spending the last 2 or 3 months trying to like hitting people on the head about, oh my God, you can't run that. Why did you run that? Like there was something about right after October 7th, we had a caption in the paper. Like I'm exhausted because I've been policing. I shouldn't say policing, but I've been like monitoring what we write because it's like that kind of language slips away and people have been doing that. You know, you look at old articles and the way they talk about Black people. And I know all people of color and people who are considered the other are doing this all the time, looking at the way we're, the frame that we're talked about and the frame that certain other people are talked about. And like right after October 7th, like 4 or 5 days after, there was something about how there was a picture of pro-Palestinian marchers in Munich. And it said they described them as demonstrators who supported the October 7th Hamas attack. And then the next sentence was rallies like that have been held in Chicago and elsewhere in the world. Now, what is that? Like, they don't think, like, if I was the editor and I saw that, I would automatically be like, what? And I'm not working on the city desk anymore. But it's like language like that, it's dangerous because it's showing you that anybody who like speaks out about, you know, what's happening to Palestinians is automatically pro-Hamas. And it's just the language that you use. I mean, the Anti-Defamation League put out an op-ed in our paper, and they said that voting for the ceasefire resolution was giving Hamas a victory. That just drives me nuts. Like I can't see the correlation. You know, and you read the resolution, Ben, we have to talk about that. When I wrote an editorial earlier this week about the ceasefire resolution, yes, I wrote that too. I wanted to make sure my colleagues saw the wording of the resolution, the final resolution, because obviously there's a lot of back and forth and a lot of negotiation. And I went on the website, the city hall, city clerk website, and I couldn't find it. I was like, where is it? I like Googled everything. And then, you know, my husband, Mick, your friend, looks up, legislation, city hall proposals and ordinances more than I do. So I'm like, Mick, come here. I cannot find this. And then it took him 15 minutes to find it. So, and when I finally found it, and I was told that there was going to be some amendments before Wednesday's city council hearing, I looked at the resolution and I'm like, I don't see anything offensive in here. There's nothing that's saying that Hamas is like wonderful and like, oh, let's like give Hamas a victory. So it just bothers me that that's a rhetoric that's out there and nobody kind of questions like what's going on here.
Man, you are now teeing something up for me. I didn't know you were going to go there. I just did a whole show. I urge everyone, if you haven't listened to it yet, with Patrick Whalen, we had a field day on the clerk's website and what a joke it is. And I mentioned Ramana and I mentioned Mick and I mentioned a certain person named Joanna, because Joanna was the one who had essentially send me the resolution. This is the second time this has happened, where I had to search the website for a resolution. The first one had to do with, this is the third time. Oh my God. How can I forget the India resolution? So there was the India resolution, which I wanted to read it before Ramana came on the show because we're going to talk about it. Couldn't find it. I think Ramana sent it to me. Okay. So then there was the first resolution having to do with blind support for Israel post October 7th after the horrific slaughter. Okay. And it was just going to be like, Israel can do whatever it wants in the name of self-defense. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. Stop. Just let's pause and mourn and fix the fence and whatever, you know, before we just start slaughtering people. But I wanted to read it before. Couldn't find that on the website. Then we fast forward to this one. I wanted to prepare for the discussion. We've had 2 days of discussion on this, Ramana, on this show. I couldn't find it. So I had to turn to Joanna. All you guys made fun of me. Oh, the baby boomer can't handle it. And then Mick couldn't. It took him 15 minutes. I love it. It took Mick. Ladies and gentlemen, one thing you know how to know about Mick Dumke, Ramona said, this dude knows how to, like, he's all in that. He's for a Gen Xer. He's really smart about computers and stuff. He couldn't find it. Oh, Ramona's shaking her head.
Maybe. No, he's not. He might be good with finding, like, legislation online.
Yeah, that's what he's good at, yeah.
But he can find legislation online, but he's not. I'm better at him at computers and looking things up. Because before you guys do your hideout show,
yeah,
he'd always be hunched over his computer and swearing and, like, trying to set up the invite. I had to, like, help him because he, like, couldn't. He cannot handle computers. Like he cannot handle technology. I'm just saying because he does a lot of the stuff.
Yeah. All right. So you're right. Okay. He's really good at finding public documents. Okay. I'll put it that way.
Yes. He's really good at finding public documents. Oh, that's why God. I had to ask for his help.
The moaning and crying from Mick Dumke when it came to those Gmail invites. Ramona, you brought back memories. Oh, I can't take it. Oh, no.
God. I told him to tell you to do it. I'm like, why don't you guys do it? And he goes, Ben is not going to do it. And
I'm not doing it because it didn't bring in anybody. And B, I'm the one who more or less booked the guest. Did he tell you about that? No, I don't think he told you about that. Anyway, the old hideout story. Poor Mick and I, man. But the point is, if the great Mick Dumke, it took him 15 minutes to find it, the city of Chicago's clerk's website, that's proof it's worthless. And I called Mick to lament about this, and he said it should have been right there at the top of the page. This is the most pressing, important issue right now that everyone's talking about in the city of Chicago. Here you can read it right here. You can make your own decision, Chicago. But no, they treat us like we're idiots. They keep information from us, Ramona. They don't want us to know. And by the way, I'm going to chide all the newspaper outlets in Chicago because you guys didn't do the link to it either. And I had the same problem with the last resolution. And I don't know why you didn't link it. Either you couldn't find it yourselves or you needed Mick Dumke to find it for you. I don't know. I don't know why they didn't link it.
The only reason I didn't link it is because it wasn't finalized when I had written my thing. But you know, when I did the India resolution, I had put the changes that were made in between, you know, when it was first proposed and the negotiations that went back and forth. And this is the India resolution. And I talked to a city hall worker or two, and they said the way this, you know, obviously people are paying more attention to the, you know, the Gaza/Israel, you know, situation. But the India resolution, they said whatever happened with the India resolution, it was the same thing. People were saying that this doesn't matter, but the Indian consulate got involved. There are a lot of people, higher ups, getting involved because they just didn't want it. And I know that there's people that are kind of, people are upset about it. I know people like who aren't part of the Indian diaspora, like they've picked up and moved on. But a lot of Indian activists of all faiths and backgrounds are so upset about it still because they feel like right-wing Indians have gotten a hold. Like they're like the city council's too dumb to realize like who they're aligning themselves with. And, it's like the ignorance and this pushback. And so I know there's people who have been trying to look in to see like any sort of connection between the donors and like, you know, how they voted. And, you know, there were obviously a lot of that going on, but it was like for all the discussion about how it wasn't going to do anything and why are we weighing in on this? There was a lot of people pushing it back against it. And as we all know, the resolution failed.
No, look, here's, I'm going to boil it down. As someone who's lived in the city of Chicago since 1981 and has studied you, Chicago, so I know you. Ramona's from Chicago, but I think I know Chicago as well as her because I've studied Chicago, even though I'm not from Chicago. And here's the thing about aldermen and city council dealing with a foreign policy issue that they're unfamiliar with. What they'll do is turn to the person whose ethnicity most resembles somebody in that fight. So if it's a resolution about India, they'll go to Raja, Congressman Raja. Hey, how should I vote on this? And whatever he tells them to do, they will do. And I don't know if literally that happened, but I'll bet you it did. Okay.
He denies it.
Okay. Raja, come on, man. Stop. All right. Then they'll go to State Senator Rahm. They'll go to him. OK, they'll go to some Indian friend of theirs. They'll ask that the waiter at their favorite Indian restaurant. What do you think? Now, when it gets to the Middle East, they'll look for a Jewish person. And there's only one in the city council, Deborah Silverstein. So I'll be like, what do I do? What do I do? OK, well, I don't know. And so that's how, in my humble opinion, they make their decision on something like that. And now what we're realizing, Ramana, is it's a new age, at least in the Middle East. I don't think we've reached that new age with India. OK, I think it's going to be a while. It's going to be like, do I believe Ramana? Who, and they probably already written you off as a nut. And, or do I agree, Raja? Go ahead.
I'm at the lowest totem pole when it comes to I don't know if it's a wrong word to use, but my people are the lowest on the totem pole of what Americans find palatable for Indian people. Like a lot of right wing Americans right now are in love with the Nikki Haley's and the Vivek Ramaswamy's, right? And they, you know, they hear my name and they're automatically like terrorist. And that includes liberal Americans too. So we're not the cool Indians. So they're okay. Like, you know, if they find out that we're being discriminated against, we've never been, I think some, most Americans are probably too dumb to realize there's differences between us. But if anyone points out that we're the bad ones, they know they're like, oh, we're gonna side with the ones who are like us, like, you know, who say the stuff that we want to hear. So, whatever. I get it, but I mean, I have to tell you, Ben, like, there was an op-ed that we had that was written by an Indian Muslim person, Indian American Muslim person, and he was talking about what was happening in India, and he was just saying that, you know, he kind of had this like long thing, I think this was like, probably in light of the guy that was killed in Canada, or maybe the American citizen that was killed overseas. And the Indian government might have been involved. And I just have to tell you, Ben, which I'm sure the same thing is being said about me right now with the situation in the editorials that have been written in the situation overseas in the Middle East. But I have found there's been Twitter chatter about why the editorial board has written certain types of op-eds or has certain type of op-eds. And there was a picture of me and they go, look, cause they got this radical Muslim on the editorial board. And it's like this Indian American group. So I'm just saying that, I'm sure word is on the street that there's a crazy Muslim on the editorial board. And that's why certain editorials and op-eds and things are getting published in the paper.
I realized we just went on that tangent about India, and I didn't do any kind of setup for it to explain to people what we're talking about. We've had many conversations about this in the past, Ramana and I. She wrote at least one column on the matter, but I forget when this is a while back.
It's 2019 is before the pandemic, but I've written about the resolution. I've kind of tied it into other things when I brought up India.
Wait, hang on. It was before the pandemic? Are you sure about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa, time flies into the future, to quote.
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, it wasn't during the pandemic. I don't remember like any sort of mask being worn.
I thought it was after the pandemic.
No.
You know what? Whenever we have these things, she's always right, Ramana. So she's looking up at her phone right now.
Yeah.
I say it was post-pandemic.
No, the India resolution? No way.
Now, all the column you wrote about the Indian resolution?
The one that I wrote before it was coming up for vote?
Here's a tangent within a tangent within a tangent. Yeah. And listeners are completely baffled. If we don't even know what to set it up. The resolution that Joe Moore, your favorite that resolution. When was that?
Okay, wait, you're right.
I'm right. My God.
It was March 2021. You're right.
Can I just bask in that? I am right. I'm sorry, Ron. I couldn't hear you. Could you repeat that?
You're right. I thought it was 2019. You know what? It makes sense because I was home. I remember taking notes on this. Like, I started getting calls and emails like from brown people who work inside City Hall who were like, hey, have you been hearing about this? And other Indian activists and stuff like that. And I don't know. I guess my concept of time has been warped. Like, you know, well, you're right. You're right. Yeah. So it's 2021.
I love that. And as I was saying, to quote your favorite rock band, time keeps on slipping into the future. That's Steve Miller. Romana's a huge Steve Miller
fan. I do like some Steve Miller.
How did I know that? She loves classic rock, ladies and
gentlemen. I'm a Gen Xer. I mean, we had the boomers stuffing music down our throat. I mean, my parents are immigrants. I like, you know, because the boomers were controlling the team. I mean, that's why I'm a Beatles fan. But I love the Beatles, and I'm okay with being a boomer, a favorite of the boomers.
That's I love the Beatles more and more with each passing day. And this is something else. Like, I can't believe this, Romana, totally tangent. Like Motown. Whenever I do the dishes, I told my wife the other day, I always put on Motown. It's like I've heard these songs a million times. And I just can hear them. I don't know if it's a sign of getting old, but it's like, ah, oh, I need to hear this song by the Beatles for the 5 billionth time. I'm gonna listen to Rubber Soul or the Temptations. I put the Temptations radio on at Spotify, man. It's just like going back in time. All right, enough baby boomer reminiscing. We really run out of time. There's so many stuff that we really can't get into because we run out of time. And this is such an important issue. I'm glad we took the time to address it.
Me too.
I urge everybody to check Romana's columns about, just her columns in general, but I'm sure there's a column coming out on the resolution, et cetera, and so forth. And I have pretty much come to the point, sometimes editorials are not signed, but I'm pretty good at detecting who wrote what. And then I go to Romana, did so-and-so write this one? And usually I'm right about it. And I'll just repeat what I said. I think the Sun-Times can be proud of itself for running that editorial. I think that editorial was very respectful to everybody on both sides. I realize it's just like a lot of passion here. A lot of people are feeling really hurt, obviously. People are feeling hated. And there's just a lot of anger in the air. A want for vengeance is in the air. I completely understand that. And so to be sort of like a person who enters a fray as a diplomat, if you will, and tries to reconcile the two sides and write a column that acknowledges the pain that each side is feeling is very difficult. And I thought the Sun-Times editorial did a good job of doing that while advocating for what has consistently been an unpopular position in this country or an unrecognized position. So I give the Sun-Times credit. Sun-Times, you know, I've been hard on you for your editorials down through the years, particularly during those ROM years, particularly whenever there was a teacher strike. Okay, a little too in love with whatever mayor is screwing the teachers. But in this particular case, I liken it to one where they were out in front for Lori Lightfoot way back when. I applaud you. So that's my thoughts on it, Romana. And since you wrote it, I'm applauding you. So excellent work, Romana, in my humble opinion.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. Enough said on that. Romana Hussein is her name. She'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll probably talk Taylor Swift. We're probably going to talk Barbie and the Oscars. There's a lot of issues in the air that we didn't get to. Romana has a great riff on Barbie, which I'll just hold off.
Well, what about, is the Super Bowl going to be done by then?
I don't. Romana saying it really keeps up on sports.
Well, lately. Yeah. Well, before we leave, I'm going to say something really quick. I was at my older sister's house last week for an interfaith thing with mostly Jewish women last week and Muslim women that my sister, friends of ours. And it was really funny because my nephews were holed up upstairs watching a football game, and I'm like, oh, the Bears are playing, and everybody made fun of me. So,
as they should. No, that's like something my wife would do. No, the Super Bowl will be a week from this coming Saturday, and I just want to urge everybody, I haven't done it yet, I'm about to record a conversation with Muiz Bawani, who's the Ben Drosky Show's football expert. He coaches football here in the Chicago public schools. So we'll be taking the deep dive on the Super Bowl and football and whether the Bears are going to keep Justin Fields. It's going to be a really geeky sports conversation. I urge everybody to check it out. The Super Bowl, Romana, is a week from this Sunday, and I will be watching. I haven't missed a Super Bowl Oh my God. The Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson Super Bowl was the one I missed. Now I know you know what I'm referring to in that case. Okay. Yeah, I know that. All right. Thank you so much, Ramana Hussein. And that's Ramana Hussein. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.